Alrighty, it's Joel Radio.
We are back.
Hi. Welcome into our listeners. How you doing? You know what I say at Joel Radio? We love our listeners.
Do we?
Nah, they're all right.
We haven't demonstrated our love by putting on a quality product for years. So, phoning it in since 2007.
So from 5 to 7,
we really put
gave a fuck,
it.
and then it was all over.
Welcome
into Joel Radio. Corey Hall's joining me today. We got some a lot of news of the day type stuff. No special guests. I tried. We both tried. Well, we're gonna have a phone in. We're gonna have a phone in today.
Speaking of phoning it in,
we're literally gonna have a guy phoning
it
in.
You never know what mysteries we're gonna have.
Yeah, so we're Joel Radio, a lot going on in the news, a lot of comedy stuff, controversial stuff, a million goddamn things. We got the big Star Wars next week. Let's tell people about that, speaking of show stuff.
Oh my.
It'll be year 3 running of the night one Star Wars review. That'll be next week here on the show.
Remember when there were years would go by between Star Wars movies?
And that's why when we did Force Awakens, the night it came out, it was a big deal. I mean, for me, I don't know. And people liked that show. I remember people listening.
Yeah, but
and I did it again for Rogue One. You weren't with me, but I had some friends, Josh and Ellen. And I'm not sure for sure who's coming with us, but I think you're in.
We're gonna pee right all over
Star Wars. So we're gonna, me and Corey and whoever else we wanted, we're going to the first screening of Star Wars here in Detroit. So we'll have that for you next week on Thursday night, all the 14th. Right. Maybe on the East Coast or in Europe, it might be Friday the 15th. But we will literally watch the movie, record the show, and post the show all
now,
in the same
Now, when there's something like Star Wars, I don't understand why they can't have a global release date. Because I know movies are staggered and some come out earlier or later in different territories.
I believe Friday may be the global release date. Because now, with digital distribution, it's way easier to do that. In the past, it would be they'd have a print that would play in America, and then they'd literally like put that print on a boat and send it to London or something to play it there. But no, I believe it is a worldwide date, which means probably people in Australia and New Zealand will see it first, actually. So, but we're seeing the first American screening. And again, I like to be the first podcast. Again, I think Star Wars not doing press screenings, as far as I know. You would know better than me. You heard anything about those?
I have not heard of
them. They may do like a Wednesday if they did anything, so it means that even if you are a member of the mainstream media.
With those big releases,
yeah.
sometimes the press screenings early, like a couple weeks early.
Yeah.
More often than not, it's usually close to the time. And Justice League screened Tuesday before opening Wednesday night or Thursday night?
Now every major release opens on Thursday night.
I can't remember if Justice League opened at midnight on Wednesday or on Thursday.
No. Yeah, they open generally stuff Thursday prime time, like after 7 p.m. That's when Star Wars is. It's 7 p.m. Thursday the 14th, even though the release date is Friday.
So Thursday night was the first.
Because they used to say, well, you can show it at 12:01 Friday, and then they just figured, well, Thursday night's dead.
Right.
Why leave the theater empty and have everybody show up at midnight? Show it at a time when people can actually fucking go to the thing.
But yeah, the press screening was not until Tuesday because they were really trying to knock down those bad Justice League reviews.
Well, they'll have a world premiere screening of Star Wars, at least one or two, probably earlier in that week. But I don't know that anyone's going to have a podcast up sooner than us. So we'll give you, again, we'll give you some spoiler-free.
Somebody will, but we'll try.
Well, but we're pretty good about that. I know people that have in the past that have enjoyed that show said,
well, guys on YouTube are racing each other.
Well, that's kind of what we're doing. Yeah, I'm racing them in that case. But so that'll be next Thursday. Now, I'm trying, again, look, 3 Star Wars movies in 3 years is unprecedented. I mean, 2 in 2 years was unprecedented last year.
Yeah.
But now we're only 2 years removed from the last canonical Star Wars, I guess is the way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is still unprecedented because, you know, Empire was 3 years. You know, those were all 3 years removed, that original trilogy.
It was like 77, 80, and then 83.
Yeah.
So there was a 3-year gap.
The prequels were 3 years apart, I believe, as well, right? 97, 2000.
Yeah, there was like maybe 2 years between each
I think one. They might have been 3 or 2.5 or something. But yeah, so anyway, we'll have that up for you Thursday. Are you looking forward to this Star Wars? Or are you kind of like, eh, I hope it's good, but if it's not,
well,
I don't give a shit.
Officially, my Star Wars fandom is dead.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I am not a Star Wars fan. In the terms of, like, I'm a Star Trek fan.
You're not a fan of Star Wars.
I am not.
Interesting.
In terms of, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't go out of my way to buy Star Wars merchandise. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well.
I might buy a mug with a Federation logo on it. I'm not going out of my way to buy Star Wars stuff.
Well,
sometimes people give me Star Wars stuff, and I never go, hey, fuck you, and throw this across the room.
Is it?
But my fandom is officially dead with Star Wars.
Interesting.
And as I explained to my my cousin's kids at Thanksgiving, there's a lot of reasons why they've murdered that franchise.
Well,
much like Darth Vader murdered Luke's father, Anakin Skywalker.
But I don't know I disagree in the sense. I mean, look, I feel like the product is better than it's been since the original trilogy.
Yeah, and
the merchandise is out of control. It's ridiculous and stupid. And to be a fan of that is almost like there's not even anything cool about Star Wars. There's no cool factor to that. Where at least Star Trek is a minority of people will enjoy this. You know, having Star Wars, you know, it's like a Budweiser. There's nothing to it that's special or interesting. It's Coca-Cola. It's boring to go, I got a Star Wars shirt or a Star Wars coffee mug.
Look,
it's boring.
French fries are good.
Yeah.
But there's nothing about any one plate of French fries that gets your dick wet.
So, I mean, I get that part. But as far as the films, if you like the films, as I do, I think I'm excited that there is a new film. I think with Marvel, as we talk, it feels like weekly on this show, too many of those.
My enthusiasm
and they're mediocre at this point. Even the good ones, you kind of go because the last two that I saw, which were Thor and Guardians of the Galaxy, because I saw that later on tape or on Blu-ray, I thought were very good. You know, Spider-Man can take a long walk off the short pier.
Yeah, I did not like that.
But you know, so I'm still
the last Marvel movie I got a kick out or excited for was Doctor Strange.
Yeah,
because they hadn't done Doctor Strange
right.
And Black Panther looks kind of interesting.
Well, I think
so because they haven't done that stuff.
I think the origin stories are still great movies, and maybe Spider-Man as an origin story would have worked, except for we've gotten that origin story 77 times in the last decade.
No, I just didn't. I'm fine with they just want to make a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah,
and they're like Spider-Man fights this guy this time. I have no problem with that. It's just that the direction they took it with the teens and the that didn't gel for me.
Let's bring it back to Star Wars. Rian Johnson directing his first Star Wars movie. The only movie I've seen of his is Looper. I was looking up
what he's directed,
and I thought Looper was a very good science fiction movie.
Sure.
Very much Terminator-inspired, but a nice job. Apparently, it seems like Lucasfilm is hot on this movie because they have given Rian Johnson the next trilogy. He will be sort of at the helm of that.
Did you see Brick?
I didn't see Brick.
Brick's a very good movie.
Okay, but so Rian Johnson seems like a legit guy. I mean, look, I love Gareth Edwards. I think Gareth Edwards is the shit. I'm a big fan of his. And Gareth Edwards, I think, did a great job with Rogue One and Godzilla and Monsters. I liked all of those movies. So I think Rian Johnson's going to do a good job with this. I'm trying to be spoiler-free in that everyone is like Luke and Rey and Snoke, and there's all this speculative shit.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to just avoid all that. I've seen the trailers. I've seen are they the Borgs or the Porgs? What are the little...
The Porgs.
The Porgs.
Those are called the marketing incentives.
Those
are the official...
The under six.
Well, you got to sell cute things to people.
Yeah.
My wife's video gaming philosophy is cute things, doing cute, running around and doing cute stuff.
Yeah,
that's why she likes the Mario games.
Right.
You know, if it's something cute, a penguin running around,
that
appeals to her.
Yeah, the new Mario, by the way, I've put so many hours into that.
Mario Odyssey.
There's cute moments, but it's actually...
Are you telling me that a man who's closer to the grave than the cradle might not be enjoying Mario.
I don't know who you refer to. No, my feeling was, is it as cute as it used to be? And I don't know that it is.
Yeah, but you're not 12.
No, but I think even your wife may be disappointed in the level of whimsy in the current Mario.
Well,
it's actually a harder, more challenging, modern game.
Yeah, it's a more...
I mean, granted, if you get a Kirby on the Switch, look the fuck out, or, you know, something like that, or a Yoshi game. But yeah, the Mario's kind of hardcore on this one. By the way, I've always been suggesting you get a PlayStation 4 and play Tearaway Unfolded, which is the most whimsical thing you'll ever see. That's great.
Is that part of the? Is that Little Big Planet related?
No, it's not. It's actually the same. Is it the same developers? Yeah, it's the people who formerly developed Little Big Planet, which is that's a good series too. They're developed by somebody else now, but Tearaway Unfolded is really cool if you like that. But anyway, so Rian Johnson, I'm looking forward to this. I know there's some cast additions. Laura Dern is in this one, and was there another major edition. They're going to do, I mean, this is our little Star Wars review. They're going to do something with Leia. She won't be in the third one.
Sure.
Or the ninth one, however you want your accountant.
Well, yeah.
So something's going to happen there. What else are we going to, what else can, you know, finally getting Luke Skywalker, which was a complaint I had about Force Awakens, or a disappointment upon first viewing.
Well, you know,
we really needed more Luke. You know, that felt unresolved.
Well, Luke's friends are all dead except the robot and the
droids, yeah. So Luke and
C-3PO,
Rey will be doing
who
something.
Plays bottom bitch to a guy who goes bloop, bloop, bloop.
Well, they kind of stood around in Force Awakens too. But my worry is by the time we get to episode 9 or whatever that is, and J.J. Abrams is going to direct that, who's left from the original trilogy at that point?
No one.
Yeah, maybe no one.
Skywalker.
Maybe. Who knows what's going to happen here? But then, you know, and again, this is sort of what we didn't like about Spider-Man. Rey is going to be the daughter of some Jedi that we don't know exactly yet.
I know
yet.
Which Jedi.
All right, but and Snoke is going to be someone from the canon in the past. And we kind of hate that stuff when everybody's related to everybody
else. We've talked about how they broke Star Wars, right?
I guess we've reviewed other movies.
And as I was explaining at Thanksgiving, and because I'm a real ray of sunshine. And
yeah.
No, we went to my...
You're not invited to my Thanksgiving.
We went to my cousin's house in Ohio this year.
Okay.
Because my mom wanted to see her sister and stuff. So, you know, we went and did that, and that was fun, and we had a good time, even though the Lions stunk it up. And
yeah.
I had a good fantasy day because Marvin Jones had a good game.
Boy.
And my cousin's husband had... Golden Tate.
You're going to tell us why Star Wars sucks when you're telling our audience about your fantasy football team.
Look, anyway, here's my thing. Now, this is the number one thing that broke me on Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I thought the prequels had done this. But then I realized that they were broken from the first sequel.
You went to Force Awakens with me and enjoyed it, and it's on a podcast.
Okay, but in terms of it being... the first Star Wars is a great movie.
Yes.
And does everything... That it okay, it's not perfect in that some of the acting is clunky and all that kind of stuff.
A classically great film,
but
regardless of the
it
saga.
It belongs in the canon because of its impact on filmmaking and its imagination, and it took all of these parts of things that had come before and recycled them in an interesting way.
Samurai, westerns, all that stuff.
And then you realize that they made up the rest of the shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
That a lot of thought went into Star Wars.
Yes.
And then when they had to fill in the mythology, it's when the shit falls apart.
Okay.
And that the original Star Wars worked great as a one-off and probably should have stayed that way. But they had to tell sequels and once it became an empire, literally, the number one stupidest thing, we've done this on the show before, but I'll tell you, this is why I hate Star Wars.
Yeah.
The galaxy has been rid of Jedis.
Yeah.
It's only 20 years after they've been gone, and yet everyone acts like Jedis were this mythical rumor that they didn't exist.
Yeah.
They've been hunted and eliminated from the galaxy by the oppressive empire. The only two Jedis left alive are Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda, as far as we know. Unless there's some other Jedi.
At the beginning of Star Wars 1977... Right. Also titled, and I disagree with, A New Hope.
Yes.
There are two Jedis in the world.
Right, because it was not titled A New Hope, but
actually,
we saw it.
There's one Jedi in the world if you want to go into what Wood Lucas was thinking.
Yes.
Because having two Jedi isn't anywhere near as powerful from a story perspective.
No.
And Yoda was created because Kenobi was dead.
Yeah, and there's no there's no implication that Yoda exists in
Star Wars. Absolutely not. There's no reference.
And apparently the original plan was that Kenobi was going to survive.
Yes.
And then they changed it during filming and went, this makes more sense if we get rid of him.
Yes. And we did. They didn't know that there'd be a second one.
Right. So, and also I think they didn't think Alex Guinness was going to be real thrilled to come back.
Well, he did come back. He did come back. I mean, he did.
But he apparently didn't like doing it.
Well.
So.
He liked the money.
Yeah. Yeah. He got he got points. So he liked that.
He liked that.
Anyway. So Obi-Wan Kenobi, the wise general. Now, Leia knows he's alive and knows where he is because she sends her droid to get him a message.
She knows he exists, yes.
And he's hiding out on the home planet of Darth Vader, the number one hand of the Emperor, the Vizier, who sits on the right side of the Emperor.
Yes.
And he's hiding out on the planet of his birth.
No, he's in the house he grew up in.
Yeah, in his hometown.
He's in the home. That's just that. He's in the house he grew up.
Like, if you, okay, let's say I committed a murder.
Yes.
And they were like, where did he go?
Yeah.
They go look at my parents' house first.
Right, yeah.
That's literally where Obi-Wan's hanging out.
If they said, Corey Hall is on the run.
Yeah.
But.
They'd come knocking on your door.
But he has a secret son that nobody knows about.
Right.
Where would we find this son?
Yeah.
We'd go to his house.
Right. It's in his fucking backyard.
Yeah.
And he hides.
None of that ever made sense.
He hides Luke with relatives of Obi-Wan, of Anakin. And then get this.
But that was a mistake in the prequels because we didn't know where Anakin grew up at all. Anakin could have grown up anywhere, and Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen could have moved to Tatooine, right? In order to raise Luke there away from the Empire.
Okay.
That would have made more sense, correct? That I think it was a mistake in the first prequel movie to have childhood Anakin. I mean, they're trying to draw parallels between Anakin and Luke, and that's why they did that, I think. But it might have been more interesting as a thing to show Anakin growing up somewhere else.
Well,
that would have been a way to prevent all of that.
It was just a failure of imagination.
It was.
Because they were like, look, we established this desert setup.
Yeah.
And then so Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ben Kenobi, as he may be known, is hanging out on this desert planet. And he's this shifty old wizard and nobody knows what he is. Except that he's wearing a fucking Jedi uniform! That is, I'm sorry, in unforgivable stupidity. Okay, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, my dad came back from Vietnam and his father said, why don't you take the uniform off?
No, but he
shit's hot right now.
But he also, but in this again, it's the mistake of the sequels to go. We didn't know how Jedi's dressed.
Right,
they could have dressed however they wanted. So when we saw Samuel L. Jackson as a Jedi, and these guys and Qui-Gon, they could have dressed any way they wanted.
Guess what? It was broken before that.
But Luke actually, in a sense, dresses like a Jedi when they're going and raiding the Death Star and all that.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Except, okay, get this. It's broken before. I thought it was. I blame the prequels because I went, when we go back to the prequels, they're all wearing Obi-Wan's robes.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan's robes make sense for him living in the desert.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a perfectly acceptable desert costume that he's wearing because everybody on Tatooine wears that kind of samurai looking outfit, right? But then the Jedi are wearing those. Why? Because it's easy and cheap. They should have had a different. But you know what? I blame the prequels and then I realized Yoda is wearing the same fucking thing.
When he finds him on Dagobah?
In Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, kind of.
Yoda
is running
around in Jedi robes.
But again, Yoda only exists to be a giant surprise that this little frog man was actually Jedi.
He's wearing Jedi robes.
I guess.
And the Jedi robes are unforgivably stupid.
The Jedi should have been knights who had some sort of
armor or different.
Like an Arthurian.
Any kind of different looking costume.
But instead, they were monks. Based upon the prequels.
And I hate that, too.
Yeah, I know. They should be getting pussy right and left and fucking bitches while they're saving the universe from evil.
And so
that would have been a much more interesting thing.
So personally, I found no interest in Star Wars after those fundamentally broken, like, okay, here's a better story right here. Why did Anakin turn evil? I still don't really know.
Yeah, well.
Right?
Right.
Anakin turned evil because he was mad at the sand people. I don't... His
mom was killed.
How about this? He falls in love with Padme.
Yeah.
They have this beautiful relationship.
Yeah.
She's fucking Obi-Wan.
Yeah. Well, that...
Suddenly...
That
that's how... But by the way, that's how human beings behave.
Yeah.
That's how real people behave.
Right.
Then you have Obi-Wan has to fight... Obi-Wan has now ruined... he's screwed up.
Yeah.
And now he has to fix the problem because he's had an affair with Padme. And then we don't know if those kids are his or not.
If the kids were Obi-Wan's and that was revealed in like episode 3 or something.
Much better
that
movie!
And that would have changed the whole nature of episodes 4, 5, and 6.
And suddenly Darth Vader has a motivation that we realize, oh, he turned evil because his best friend was fucking his wife.
And it also preserves Luke as... Luke is a schmuck when you realize what an asshole Anakin is in the prequels. Meaning that, oh, I know there's good in him. There's no good in him. They've never shown good in him at one point. So when you see, like, you know, when you see Return of the Jedi, or by the way, if you watch Return of the Jedi now, as I did before, I think it was before Force Awakens, I watched all six, Vader does not do anything evil at all. He is not a bad guy for one frame of Return of the Jedi. He does nothing bad. He doesn't force choke anyone. He doesn't do anything bad.
Right,
in that
he's
movie
completely evil in the
first
two movies.
They have defanged him completely by the time you get to the third one because they wanted you to go along with that flip at the end. So yeah, you remember him cutting off Luke's arm and doing all the bad shit he did in the first two movies. But by the third one, Vader's walking around. And he is the Emperor's footman. And it's, the whole Vader character, that arc of Vader over six movies, granted, made decades apart and without a real, and sort of, you know, trying to get from point A to point B and not worrying about the points in between, it doesn't make sense.
Well, he is still,
the character development doesn't make
sense. He doesn't personally do any of the Force choke in Jedi, but he is ordering them to kill the shut down the rebellion.
I understand that. But I mean, as far as like, you do not have a scene with him doing anything bad in that movie. Now, he does fight Luke with the lightsaber.
Which, by the way, puts a complete lie to this. This bullshit lie that Lucas had all these movies plotted out. No, he had some notes on a page and some scribbles. And he had that big stupid script that
Luke and Leia were not brother and sister.
No.
Ever.
If you read the original, the original, the Journal of the Wills or whatever. See, now I know too much Star Wars.
And by the way, those are all available on the internet if you want to go read those. I've read them.
They turned them into comic books.
And I've read them. All right, so you are enthusiastic about the new Star Wars movie,
I've seen nothing.
Ryan Johnson. He's a good director.
Yes, but
you liked the previous movie that's following. I don't know how you felt about Rogue One, but Force Awakens you liked.
I've enjoyed those, but in terms of like a fanboy reaction.
Yes.
Where, like, the new Godzilla, King Kong Escapes, or King Kong...
Skull Island was good, yes.
I went in as a fan.
And that was
and
was
I
a good
enjoyed
movie, yes.
But in terms of fandom,
okay,
I don't have as much of that left for Star Wars. It's just dead. It looks like nothing I've seen from the trailers makes this look bad.
Right.
It looks like it's well-made. It looks like it'll be fun. But, you know.
All right. Let's turn to comedy now. I got a few comedy
Another thing I'm no longer a fan of.
Well, you know, here... Well, let me quickly give you a couple comedy stories from Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle, where I am employed, where I teach a class. If you're a comedian who wants to make your game better and try to be a professional stand-up comedian and work and make whatever money there is in stand-up and learn how to run a show. We heard from Melissa Hager last time about the class on the last show. If you didn't hear that, I've heard lots of good things about the Melissa episode, by the way, so thanks again to her. If you haven't listened to that, it's great.
The delightful Melissa.
January 6th is the next advanced comedy class at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle, 1:30 p.m. on Saturdays. You can call the Comedy Castle, 248-542-9900. Find out about that. But here's a couple Comedy Castle things. Saturday night on the reservation sheet, as we prepared after the end of the first show with a guy named Ralph Harris headlining and Bill Baron Kay and Keith Leonard. I look on the sheet and I see that there is a Marin party of 20 booked. Because I like to run down and see who's coming and see where everyone's sitting. That's part of my job as one of the doormen there. And I see that and I go, oh, Maron, interesting. Mark Maron's a pretty well-known comic and, you know, have no reason to believe this has anything to do with Mark Maron. And then I look at the fine print and I guess for the waitresses or the server or maybe even the ticket girl, it was like, see Mark $4, meaning that when the check comes, that Mark Maron will be picking up the check for this party of 20. And then I go to Bill, who works with me, who you know, Bill Lodge. I say to Bill, I go, well, look, I don't know.
They didn't mean Mark Ridley.
No. It was like Mark, because it would say like if the Smith party of 15 was come, you know, Angelo Smith was going to be picked. So that's what it's sort of a notation we have in there. No, it was not Mark Ridley because Mark Ridley wasn't there.
And one has a K and one has a C.
Right. But this one had a K, but it was still like, oh, Mark Maron is coming. And I say to Bill Lodge, who made the seating, I go, well, look, you took this Mark Maron's party and you putting Mark Maron at the back of the room. And I go, maybe he's a friend of Ralph's or something. And he was in town or maybe they're doing some glow stuff. So I'm trying to figure out why Mark Maron's coming to the castle. Because you think someone would have said, hey, Mark Maron's coming to the castle. I don't know why.
Yeah.
All I know is that Mark Maron's coming to the castle. So I go, okay, what's that, Bill? Why'd you put Mark Maron's party? I go, look, I don't know that this is Mark Maron the comic, but what are the odds that there's another Mark Maron who's coming to see comedy at the comedy game? I said, you probably should have given this guy better seats because he's a big deal. I never heard, you know, Bill, a big biker guy. I don't know Mark Maron. Well, he does a podcast. I don't listen to podcasts. Okay, well, he's a big deal. How about this?
It's if the most famous
up,
podcast
And I told him,
the
like, it's the biggest podcast in the world. I go, listen, if Mark Maron shows up, and I can't say that I met, but in 96, I went to a Conan taping. And Mark Maron's friends were sitting in front of me. Mark was one of the guests.
Yeah.
And after the show, Mark came up and sat with his friends. And so I was inches from Mark Maron in 96.
Oh. I've met
him. And you've met Mark. But I go, well, look, if Mark comes in, we're going to have to give him better seats. Is that okay? Because it's fucking giant comic. Yeah, that's fine. Whatever. You know, you know, I'm getting shit. And I go, look, this is the right thing to do. We're a comedy club. We got to know who the names are when they're coming in.
And of course,
you know, later I see the... You know, Mark Maron's party's not here. Mark Maron's party's not here. Finally, as the show's about to start, they come in. And we're the Maron party. Okay. They're coming in. Where's Mark? And there he is. Some fucking schmuck named Mark Maron.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's, so not the guy we know from the WTF podcast, but there was a guy. And I'm wondering if that guy just kind of waves his dick around a little bit because he shares the name. Like, hey, man, we'll go see comedy. Because I'm Mark Maron. And it was, you know, some guy in his 60s.
By the way, the
who was throwing money around. He looked like some lawyer or some real estate guy.
You know, having met Mark Maron, and I feel like he would not make a big stink.
Mm-hmm.
He might call Ridley and go...
And go, hey, I'm coming.
Hey, I'm coming. Well, and he might pop into the green room or something or whatever. But like, he, you know what I mean? He wouldn't like make a big
deal. I did it on there. Didn't we do it on the show about the celebrity that came in, didn't tell anybody, stood in line with everybody else, and then we brought him as Tim Meadows.
Yeah.
And it was like, Tim Meadows just fucking wants your show. His family lives here.
Sometimes with comics, it's like, sometimes they'll just slide in and you won't know.
You never know how they're going to roll.
Well, when I was working with Amy Schumer, Attell was at the castle the same night. Yeah. And I told her that.
Yeah.
And for a couple minutes, we were debating whether to run over between our shows to go say hi to Attell.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, how are we going to get you in and out of there without like. She wasn't a superstar
she
at
wasn't
that point.
Her show was on.
But we could. We would have probably just walked in and went to the green room.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's funny.
But I mean, there's been, you know, Ron White showed up to surprise Attell. Kevin Downey, who was on AGT, had just gotten off AGT, stopped by one night to say hi to the headliner because he knew him. He was in town for something. So it does happen sometimes. I just thought it was funny that, like, you know, Mark Maron's coming. What are the odds? And then another guy who was there, and this was obviously Bill, but Rob Schneider did two shows last weekend. And boy, when you hear about Rob Schneider coming and you go, oh, man, what's this stand-up going to be?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do Deuce Bigalow and the copy guy for an hour. Fucking hold on to your hats.
Yeah.
And you've seen Real Rob on Netflix, and you told me that, you know, you were. You
I've seen an episode of
You
least,
shrugged your shoulders through that. And I go, boy, what's this going to be like? And I got to say, I was pleasantly surprised by his act.
Yeah.
His act was very good.
Yeah.
Two, I think, the detriment and surprise of some of those people that showed up.
Well, you know, sometimes guys who make terrible movies and whatever are, like, Tom Arnold does a good job as a stand-up comic.
Well, Tom Arnold's thing is more about here's stories from my show business life, which I enjoyed. But Tom was doing more like a professional wrestler stand-up comedy where they're telling road stories.
That's what the wrestlers all
do. But
yeah.
I tell you, Rob, here's what I felt. And again, he's not this guy. But I know he works with him. I know it's his friend. It felt like he was trying to do like a Chris Rock type act.
Oh.
And it was very good. Now, it wasn't like it was 85 minutes. Yeah. And you know, was all of that gold? I don't know. But I was pleasantly surprised by how good Rob's stand-up was, at least trying to be. He said he's doing a Netflix special, you know, off Real Rob on Netflix. They've given him, you know, an hour or whatever. So he, whatever he did at Comedy Castle is sort of the warm-up for that. And then he's going to be touring like a bigger tour solo. Because he goes out with Sandler and those guys in Spade. And
I wonder how Sandler
do.
Is. Does Sandler still
Well, you know, Melissa, who was in here, I know, went to their show at Soaring Eagle up there. And she said it was good. But Melissa, God bless her.
Perhaps not. Melissa,
who you know, kind of knows good comedy, also is very easily starstruck. And would be very happy to be sniffing Adam Sandler's farts, you know, in a way that you and I won't, or certainly with me and Rob Schneider, it was not the case. But yeah, so Rob was cool. I enjoyed hanging out. He told me some good Hollywood goss after the show. Some gossip.
Is that the story?
Which
is
I like. But he was he
don't
was
ever
a nice
use
guy.
The word goss again. All right. Anyway.
All right. Well, fine.
No, I'm just.
Well, then I just redid the website to be Hot Goss with Joel and Corey.
Hot,
and now I got to change the whole thing.
Hot Goss.
I got to change. Wasn't that in Heather's, though? Wasn't that the name of the?
It could have been. Yeah.
Isn't? Hey, Hot Goss is on.
Oh, God.
And it was like Heather killed herself or something.
Hot Goss sounds like a bladder infection. Got a case of the Hot Goss.
I think I know the name of this. I think I know the title of this episode.
Speaking of something that felt like a bladder infection.
What was that? I was on a thing.
Oh, you were on a thing.
Well, I was going to talk about comedy in the sense that there was a movie that came out, which I didn't realize how stand-up centric this was.
Yeah.
And it's controversial in its own way. And look, we've all seen documentaries where people argue a position, and this could be Roger Moore, what's the guy's name? Not Roger. Michael Moore stuff.
My mom does
Roger
the
and
same
me.
Thing.
Michael Moore, Roger
she calls
Moore.
Him Roger Moore. Yeah.
Roger Moore. I'm Roger Moore. Who? Roger Moore. Cannonball Run 2, I believe.
The Jews control Hollywood.
Roger Moore. But Michael Moore has done this. You had things like An Inconvenient Truth. You have these food documentaries. Everyone's got a position. And this one I thought was weird. The Problem with Apu on True TV. Made, directed, and written by, boy, don't let me screw this up, Harry Kondabolu, who's a guy that you might know. He's been on some things.
Yeah.
It's
Hari.
Hari. That's
Hari Kondabolu.
Well, Harry. Yeah. Isn't that what you call Harry?
It's H-A-R-I, but he pronounces it Hari.
Well, I think people call him
Harry. Which is the first thing, which is a dickhead about him. All right.
So this is on True TV. You and I both watched it. And I guess the position is, as an Indian growing up, as a young boy, Simpsons came on in 1989. And since then, he is constantly heckled with Apu. They have a clip from his stand-up where a guy in the crowd yells, "Thank you, come again," at him. And, you know, it's annoying that as an Indian, you are only known as a stereotype. Apu is reinforcing negative stereotypes, which white people think is funny to call every Indian person Apu. Every Indian guy in show business, for the most part, is in this documentary in one form or another. From
a lot of them,
From Cal Penn, Aziz Ansari. Mm-hmm. I mean, every Indian guy you know is
Masif Andi.
Yeah, tons of guys.
Yeah,
the Silicon Valley guy. Everybody's in this.
Yeah, the guy from Office Space.
Mindy Kaling is mentioned. She's not in there. Not yet, and yeah. And
well, here's
the big sick guy is mentioned, but not in there either.
Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah, but you know, and he made this movie. To get rid of it. Now, you, before even seeing this, were like, fuck this guy. The Simpsons is this great legendary thing. Apu, they make fun of everybody. And we had these conversations privately. I think the movie did a good job of defending the Simpsons and, you know, presenting both sides of the argument.
I think the movie hurt him, his own case.
Well, here's my feeling.
My initial impression was he was wrong about this.
Yes.
And my impression after watching the movie was he's dead wrong about
this. Well, here's the thing. You make a movie. So Hari You did a great job. You made a movie which is sound, rational, emotional at times to an argument, reasoned, sound, cogent, well put together, entertaining, all of those things. And yet, I completely disagree with your conclusion, but that's the way movies work.
Well,
and I can recommend this as a movie, even though I disagree with his position ultimately on should The Simpsons get rid of Apu?
Okay.
Or you know, is Apu racist? And I disagree with all of those sentiments. And yet, he does make a great case. And in his mind, I mean, again, it's one of those things where, like, we don't, and this is one of the problems with America. Do we all need to think alike? Is there only one position that you can have on the character of Apu? And I feel like America, especially in the age of social media, is becoming, there is only one position you can have on any controversial issue, and every other opinion needs to be destroyed. I don't like that. I don't like it. I don't give a fuck what the issue is. Take the names off the issues. I think things like abortion and gun control and these things, national defense, and all these, you can have different opinions. Even if something as trivial as the character of Apu, you can have differing opinions, and that's okay.
I think this documentary is a wet sack of garbage from an unfunny fucking talentless hump. All of the other comedians you named have established themselves in show business. Hari Kondabolu is an unfunny piece of fucking garbage.
Oh, come on.
He did. Okay, by the way, he also admits that he did. Okay, here's what you do. Okay, when you make a documentary, when you make a documentary as a comedian, okay? And we've seen many documentaries about comedians and by comedians.
Yeah.
Is part of your mission in that film, and I believe this in anything, in any, when I do radio, when I go on TV, when I go and do a gig, when I give an interview, whatever it is you do as a professional comedian, is your job not to get fucking jokes?
Well...
And at what point did you laugh at Hari Kondabolu in this
movie? I thought the movie was entertaining in its own way.
I never laughed once at him.
I'll tell you,
I didn't think he was funny.
The Simpson clips made me laugh.
Well, and that's exactly it. The
Which
Simpsons
is amazing.
Clip,
you see so much Simpsons in it.
Simpsons,
I was surprised by how much Simpsons footage was in it.
But the Simpsons clips undermined his stupid fucking
argument.
Yeah,
I guess.
Okay, there's a clip in there. Okay, one of the clips they chose to use is Homer and Bart come in dressed in Civil War. They're like, hey, we're on our way to a Civil War reenactment.
Yeah,
we need more Indians, is what Homer says to Apu. And Apu's like, I don't even know how to begin, which part of that to explain you're wrong about. Okay, that points out that Apu, it's Apu is not only smart, he's historically more advanced and understands better that the Indians he's talking about are the wrong Indians and they were involved in Civil War.
Yeah, I know.
It's a multifarious joke. Which makes Homer the butt of the joke and makes the innate racism behind people that would make that stupid fucking conclusion to be the joke.
Exactly. It's
the clips he fucking used made the case for The Simpsons stronger.
But you know, ultimately, here's the thing. If I was him, and I'm not, I might feel that way. I might feel like, boy, this is a negative stereotype against my people. And there are negative Italian stereotypes on The Simpsons, the mobsters, the cook
pizza
that shows
guy,
up, you know, and you see those guys.
It's a who on a pepperoni.
And then those guys show up, and it's fine. The thing is, are you going to be upset about it to where you would waste energy on a movie? Like, you know, I don't get that.
No,
I don't get that. He did a good job with it. I can't.
Well,
fault him.
At one point, he says. At one point, he says he's trying to get Hank Azaria in the documentary. And Hank sends him an email and says, "You know, hey, I you're doing an interesting thing and it's thought provoking. I'm not going to be involved in this, but you know, good for you."
His quote was, "I don't think I want to be at the mercy of the edit." I think is what he said, which is interesting in a documentary. Yeah, you are where I felt like he would do things. And by the way, he did TMZ. I don't know if you saw that. Did you? Did you see the? Because they found
Azaria
outside an airport or something. But here's the thing about TMZ, by the way. You know when they find the guy walking into the airport and they, hey, we walked up on this guy out doing his shopping. Those are set up in advance most of the time. And so clearly, Hank wanted to say something publicly. he used TMZ as his venue to get out his statement, which all was like, well, we're going to think about it at the Simpsons, and I don't want to speak for Simpsons, but we'll think about it. We'll talk about it. So maybe ultimately Harry will get what he wants out of
guys,
these guys also
hang out at LAX.
They do.
And I've seen them there.
But they also don't always get these celebrities being all that willing to be interviewed in such a way. I mean, it's you got to take it from me. The TMZ stuff is most of the time set up.
Well, if you're a big celebrity, not at Hank Azaria's, you know, top shelf, right. But you know, you can go out the back door.
No, but this is a hot button issue, and that's who he used for. But anyway, okay. Enough about the mechanizations of Hollywood.
I will say in the defense of the movie, the point about there not being Indians represented, is fair. All of that was fair.
Yes.
But putting it on Apu specifically is foolhardy because it's a show where it's all satire.
It is. But they do bring up that point. And Dana Gould, I thought,
Dana Gould did a great job defending the show.
Dana Gould did not create The Simpsons. He came in later.
He was a writer.
12 years in, he came in. So he's not like Mike Reese or any of those guys or Sam Simon, who's dead now. James Brooks, the guys that actually created the show and created these characters, he's not one of those guys. But yeah, Dana Gould did a great job and brings up all these points. So I thought that the movie was good and that it did have that dissenting opinion.
That's because Dana Gould is funny and this guy's not. And that guy also is a writer for W. Kamau Bell.
Yes.
Who, if you find me a less funny human being.
Oh, my God.
No, Kamau Bell is likable and smart and just not funny.
I don't know him or his career. I didn't watch his
He's
show.
He's got a travel show.
And apparently
show
no
CNN.
One else did because it's not on anywhere.
Right. He's got a travel show on CNN.
And he does a podcast with Harry.
Like, he's a guy I want to like, but I never think is funny.
No, it's fine. Right. It's not for me. Do you want to get another opinion? Because I feel like I like the movie. Now, did he see this movie, the guy we're about to talk
probably
to?
Probably not, because you know him.
I mean, I don't know. I guess we can do this. I mean, we'll see if he's... Maybe I can't have him on speaker.
Hello.
Bill Bouchard, what's going on?
How you doing, Joel?
Joel Radio, Corey's sitting over here.
Are we live?
We are live. How you doing?
America's
what
sweetheart.
What are you guys up to? Just hanging around the bed?
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Well, look, we do that most days. We only record once every 2 weeks when we do it, but yeah.
The Palatial Studios.
But when are you going to go Facebook Live? Or
well,
that,
you know.
Why do I have to drag? Or do I have to go do this myself?
Well, if you came in, we'd allow you to Facebook Live this.
I mean, you definitely need to get some video going. People need to see what's going down here. This isn't a show that should have been on MTV in like 1989.
Well, here's the sad thing is when we used to bring like girls in here and spank them and do all kind of stuff, we didn't have video.
Yeah, it didn't exist.
What do you got?
Then we used to do YouTube reviews.
Yeah.
And I realized nobody wants to look at these two fat fucks.
Yeah, we did. Somebody was watching one of our reviews the other day, and they sent me a link. They go, Joel, what happened to you? You look like you were fat and fun back then. And I go, yeah, you're probably right. But anyway.
At least 50% of that statement is correct.
Bill, here's the debate. We're going to let you plug your stuff. I got your stuff written down, believe it or not. I know you're going, what stuff do I have? But you do, believe me. Trust me. I talked to your wife. She told me you had stuff going on. This problem with Apu movie. They want to get rid of Apu. I don't know if you saw this thing.
I have not seen it. I just saw a little TMZ talk with Hank Azaria.
Yeah.
I thought
the movie was good, even though I disagree with the guy's conclusion. Corey wants to put this guy in a boat back to you know, Bali or where he's from, or back to Bollywood. So, you know, my feeling.
Well, what's your question? What am I?
I don't know.
You need to decide something?
I think you're the deciding vote here, but then again, you didn't see the movie. So go ahead and talk out your ass and insult me or him or both. That's what we're asking for.
Hey, look, man, isn't the show, isn't it a satire? Isn't it just picking up? I don't know, but I'm not Indian, so I don't know what to do about this
and
stuff.
And that stuff is in the documentary, even though it is sort of very sad staring at the camera going, people would make fun of my dad because they thought he was Apu, you know.
The number one problem... Bill's laugh is worth 100 points.
He's high right now, anyway.
They're that upset over something like that.
Okay,
just,
the number one problem I have with this documentary... Well, I have two problems. One, the guy himself isn't funny. He also admits that he spent the early part of his stand-up career being this guy and doing this bit. And then
early in his career, he did the Indian accent.
That he basically, the show was about his parents and how stupid they are. In the movie, he goes to his parents and they go, "What's the big deal with Apu? I don't understand what the problem is." his parents are like, his parents go, "We thought he was funny."
Nah, they didn't quite say that.
Yeah, they did.
You got to read between the lines to get to that conclusion.
Now, Cal Penn and Asif
Cal
Mondi,
Penn's like, "I hate the Simpsons." I thought that was surprising.
Okay, but this guy, Hari Kondabalu, the guy who made it, says, "Well, I love the Simpsons. I just hate Apu." But I guess that means he loves the B guy. And I guess that means he loves Krusty the Clown.
Yeah,
we're talking about the cartoon, right?
Yeah. He loves. So I'm saying, this is a show in which there's a cheap Jewish clown comedian.
There's
the Scottish guy comes off real great. Everybody is a parody of it.
Yeah, I agree.
Every character on the show is an exaggeration of every aspect of human existence. And this guy picks the fucking one that looks like him and goes, "Well, this is bullshit."
These things are not mutually exclusive. They can both be true.
Did he interview a Mexican about the B
guy? He was butthurt that people made fun of him and called him Apu. And I go, "Well, look, they're making fun of everybody, and you call me a greasy, hook-nosed Dago pizza maker all the time anyway. So what's the difference? I got a thick skin, and I'm fine with it."
First of all, I would never call you a greasy, hook-nosed pizza maker. I'd call you a dirt ball stromboli-eating fuck.
That's what you call Sal D'Amelio. Oh. Let's get this straight, Corey. Keep your Dago straight.
Hey, listen, we don't want to get the Italian community round.
You know what's funny is that Sal's family doesn't lay concrete, but Bill's does.
Oh, well,
it's a weird thing that one of you has family that works in the concrete business.
Anyway. All right. So Bill settled nothing, but it's fine. I think we know where he's going.
He's on your team. It doesn't really affect my life.
But
so
do you think that there's some humorlessness that's going on with this new generation of people that are Don Rickles? There's millennials that are like, "Well, that awful Don Rickles, he went to hell."
Yeah.
And I went, I thought that Don Rickles was inclusive.
Yeah.
In that everybody got made fun of. And when you don't make fun of somebody and you don't even acknowledge they exist, that's the racism.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm being too clever with this, but I don't know.
This got deep quick, man.
Yeah, Bill does not want to think this hard.
I know.
It's very early in the day. It's 3:23 p.m. for Bill.
First of all,
what are you doing?
First of all,
what are you asking asking him to do here?
We're only an hour away.
I was listening to Joe Scarborough.
We're only an hour away from when Bill reloads the bong at 4:20. So we're a little too early for you.
All right, but listen, Bill, anything in comedy you want to tell us? Anything going on the road?
Anything in comedy that I want to tell
you? Yeah,
you know,
anything funny, share something with the audience that might end
I have some shows coming up this weekend with Melissa Hager, who was just on your show. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, so that's going to be fun with Norm Stoltz.
How many stoplights in the town you're playing, you think?
I have no idea even where I'm playing. Oh, Vassar Golf Course, I'm playing two of the nights, wherever that is. So that one is, that's in the middle. They have no streetlights out there. Yeah,
this is a true story that Bill and I did a show at a golf course once up in, where was it? It was up Ontonagon. Where was it? We went to a golf course, and the crowd was light, and the guy says, "Well, the other bar in town got a mechanical bull."
I've opened for a mechanical bull. I'm not kidding.
That's a true story. Bill and I did a gig up there.
Well, there you go. That'll
it was
happen.
A golf course in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
It was like,
yeah, I know that. Yeah, that's true. Now I remember, Corey.
That was like mullet.
There was nothing but cornfields, and all of a sudden there was this little building.
Mullet Lake. Is that where it was?
I don't know, but it should have been called that if it wasn't.
It was up by Mullet Lake, and the guy said, "The other bar, 2 miles from here, they got a mechanical bull."
Well, shit.
And that's drawing
Mullet Lake. Is there any truer lake than Mullet Lake in the mid-Michigan?
Well, I hope Vassar didn't get a jukebox this week and that everyone shows up at your show for you and Melissa and all that stuff. And Bill, by the way, if you want to know this, and I think I'm sending someone your way. Someone asked me, the gift of comedy or a class can be yours with Bill Bouchard January 13th.
Yes, it can. January 13th.
If you're a beginner, because I plugged my class already. But Bill, if you've never done comedy or you know somebody that's never done comedy, go take Bill Bouchard's beginner comedy class at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. 248-542-9900. You can call, sign up for that. Starts again January 13th. And Bill does a nice job.
I appreciate the plug, though. That's very fun.
Well, that's the idea. People listen and they go, you know, maybe I want to
crank out a new batch of people whose hopes and dreams will be destroyed by year one.
That's right. Bill,
Builds them up and I tear them down. That's how the comedy classes work at the club.
They leave high and they go home sad.
Yeah.
You're training the next generation of guys who will drive up to Pinconning and be told that the audience is overfishing at the ice fishing hole tonight. That's why they didn't show up.
You should have been here last week.
Oh, I've heard that. I got told at the casino in Sault Ste. Marie that people were the smelt were running. That's why that's why the audience was late that night.
I'm also going to be at the Bull Ring.
Oh,
the
my
Bull Ring.
God.
You guys ever play the Bull Ring?
You know what? I have, and that was one of my least favorite places on the road. And I saw a guy playing there, like a relatively new guy was like featuring there. And I went like, as long as that exists, I will never be a road comic again. I will on purpose withdraw myself from any possibility of doing the road. Because the fact that that show, which is eight shit, which is a fucking black hole of laughs, has existed, run by don't even get me started on the staff and the ownership of that fucking shit. This fucking place is where comedy goes to die, and it's existed for 15 fucking years. And how many comics are you going to give a bad review? So, how many talented comics who pour their heart and soul into being an original fucking voice have to go to the Bull Ring to be told by the fucking agent who wouldn't know comedy if it blew it in his fucking dickhole, wouldn't know it, and be told that you suck and you can't come back and you're not allowed to do my gigs because the goddamn the manager that smells like goddamn tuna fish, and I'm not going to go there, was telling you she thought you weren't funny, but she was running food orders for 2 fucking hours while you stood in the back and waited for the dinners to come out. Well, fuck you and fuck your Bull Ring.
Hey, Bill, when can we see you there?
So you're saying you had a bad set?
I had a great. What do you think? What do you think kind of a set I had?
Bill, when's your show at the Bull Ring?
Yeah, go see Bill. Yeah, have some fucking laughs at the Bull Ring.
How can people get their tickets ahead of time?
Oh my God!
Fuck all of you. I hope you know who you are. Send them a link. Send them a link. Send them a link at the Bull Ring. Send these agents. Send these guys. You know who I'm talking about. Send them a link.
There's gigs like that. There's gigs like that, though. For me, it's Whitmore Lake.
Yeah, but you know what?
I will never go to Whitmore Lake ever again in my life.
What's at Whitmore Lake?
Captain Joe's in Whitmore Lake.
Okay. Yeah, I played there a few times.
And I've gone there and just... I've gone there and the other guy was hilarious and we just... And I know... And I've worked 100 gigs with him. And we ate 100 dicks at that Captain Joe's, and they were the worst people in the world.
What was the place that was on the lake, like the Fenton Bar that was like Sabo's Tuesday?
Oh, that was the
what's the name of that place? It was two
what
different
the hell
things.
Was it in? Snappers on the water.
Which and sounds, it, now it's something else though.
That sounds like a Victorian venereal disease. Snappers on the water.
But here's the problem with the Bull Ring, ultimately, Bill, is that when these gigs suck...
Bill's got to get when some these money gigs, out
when
of
these,
it.
When these gigs suck, when you send out good comics to die at a thing like this, to die on a hill like this, the natural selection should tell you that these gigs will go away or that...
But they don't!
They don't, and that's what kills me, is that this shit, horrible, awful gig, places like Connections in Toledo where I could fucking... I could crush in that fucking room. I don't care if it's Late Show Friday.
That was a good room. Yeah.
Headliners couldn't fucking follow me at that thing because it was a full house and everyone was there to have fun. And then you take me to some place, you know, where people are eating ribs and you tell me I'm not funny. Fuck you. And these places exist. That's the problem with the road. It's the problem with the road, Bill.
Okay, I swear to God.
It was out of the beating road.
This is a true story about snappers on the water.
But Russ, that's gone, fine.
I know it is. But Russ Brown and I were in there one night, okay, and we're playing pinball before the show. They had Dirty Harry pinball, so we're standing there, and it's like 15 minutes before the show, and nobody's in there yet.
Yeah,
and there's like 5 guys at the bar, and the one guy at the bar starts going, "I told you not to touch me, man. I said, back off. And I turn to Russ and I go, well, this is going to get good. And then it gradually, in the manner of all hillbilly fights, be like, I told you, faggot, to back up off me. And then they start throwing just full on, like,
oh my God.
Like Blues Brothers movie Roadhouse Brawl. They're throwing chairs. They're on the ground. Another guy had a snake. I swear to Christ. Had a snake around his neck. He had like a python. One of the guys in the bottom of the pile gets bitten, not by the snake, but by a person. Like one of the guys in the bottom of the pile bites the dude. And he's like, you bit me, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And they throw the guys out. And it's like 3 minutes to showtime. A whole crowd walks in, like 150 people just showed up there at 8, walked in, sat down. We did the show.
There you go.
Full on bar brawl.
That's it.
2 minutes before showtime.
Yeah. Anyway, Bill, good luck with those things. I know I got a little testy. I've been drinking a lot. I got to switch to decaf.
When are we?
I've been drinking black coffee for 4 hours.
Which are we good?
Yeah.
Bill, when are you going to be playing the murder hole in Ontonagon? Can we see you there at the stab?
I don't know. I got some other stuff coming next year. It's all one nighters though. You know, nothing big really. I got Dr. Grin's coming up.
No, Dr. Grin's.
Well, Bill, if
the weekend before Christmas.
I'm sure at some point you can
21 to 23.
At some point you and I will be working.
That's the Bob.
Some point you and I'll be working a place with sawdust on the floor sometime soon, right. And we'll enjoy all of that.
All right, Bill.
The great Bill Bouchard, everybody.
Thanks, Bill.
What? Where is this going?
I don't know. It's going somewhere else. Now I'm done.
All right, I'll talk to you.
All right, man. Bye. Later, Bill. Thank you. It's Bill Bouchard for you. Well, my phone was blowing up. Let's just keep the comedy fun going.
That was the best. That was the most animated you've been.
Because you know what? I honestly,
months.
Listen.
What? If not years.
You know how they say sometimes, and again, boy, I'm going to sound like a dick, but you know. Yeah. Sometimes abusers bury the traumatic parts of their lives. You know, when you're in a victim, when you're a victim of some sort of crime or some traumatic event, it comes back.
But
later.
That's the thing. Okay, that's the thing about comedy that will blow your mind out. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you're making another call.
Well, he called me, so okay. Like you keep talking though.
But that Whitmore Lake, it's a house of horrors for me, and I'll just never have a good set there.
Fragman.
All right, listen, I'm live on Joel Radio. So if you were something that you don't want everyone to hear. Save it. I know there's a voicemail.
Well, the whole wide world can fuck right off. How's that?
Bill Hildebrandt, Mike. Believe me, I just went off on road gigs like a fucking maniac.
Bill,
five minutes ago.
Hi, it's Corey. Bill, have you ever played the bull ring?
Bill built the bull ring. Are you fucking kidding me? That's his crowd.
I've ridden it.
Yeah.
Oh, you got the infamous Corey Hall there?
Yeah, Corey's here too. Say hi to him.
So you guys are raking up some decent dirt today, then.
I guess. We just talked to Bill Bouchard, and he was telling us about his road gigs, and I was thinking back to some of those and getting all pissed off. But
nothing will beat the plywood aisle at Home Depot.
Yeah, that we did. I've told the Home Depot stories many times. I have the photos. In fact, I keep one. I literally, Corey, keep a picture of me on stage at the Home Depot near my desk. Shall I ever answer an email about booking myself on the road again? I literally do. Corey's looking at it now. But
this is the worst thing ever.
Yeah,
it was really bad.
But you know, it was a private.
I like that they put a carpet down.
Yeah, they did. Well, they have those. Those are on aisle 13.
They put an area rug down.
But Bill, you know, Bill Hildebrandt here, my comedy mentor and a guy that I give a lot of credit to. And, you know, guy, we've been on the show many times. And what's new, Bill? What can we talk about today?
Who is this again? Never heard of you.
Yeah, well, listen.
Hey, listen. So here's my worst road gig. You ready?
Yeah.
So I get to this little teeny tiny town in Pennsylvania. And the guy was supposed to put me up in a condo, and I get there and says, I got bad news for you. He says, the condo has been condemned. And I said, so there's no staying there? He says, yeah. He says, there's no water, there's no electricity. But what we can do, he says, we can put a cot in the kitchen of the bar here for you.
Oh, wow.
And I said, wait a minute, you got to be kidding me.
Man.
I'm going to sleep in a cot in your kitchen, you know, of the bar where the show was, you know.
Mm, yeah.
And he says, well, he goes, I know it doesn't sound very inviting. He says, but on the other hand, you've got close to, you know, $15,000 worth of liquor here you can get into.
He was serious?
So I said, yeah, deal, yeah. He said, well, I was there. You know, he was going to lock the doors, and I could drink as much as I wanted. He said, help yourself.
So basically open bar, but you're sleeping in a kitchen.
Yeah, open bar, but I got a cot in the kitchen.
That's
and,
the deal you made.
I got the TV on. I'm drinking beer right out of the tapper like a water fountain. I'm putting my mouth right up there. You know, I'm drinking all the best whiskeys. I got Crown Royal shots in front of me. But here's what he didn't tell me. So there I am. I'm drunk. Of course, I'm half naked. I'm on this couch in the kitchen, and he didn't tell me that the cleaning crew shows up at 6 a.m.
Holy shit.
They were like, it's time to make the donuts. They come in and start baking and stuff.
And there I am, you know, playing tent, and these two broads walk in, and they scream when they see me because they didn't know I was there. But I say broads. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say broads in this climate.
Yeah, Mr. Weinstein tried to not try to.
You meant skirts, right?
Two chicks walked in, and there we were. So there's my road story.
Oh, these two gashes come in there, and I swear.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Oh, man. Anything you called me about something. Can we talk about it on the air?
Look, I'm trying to get you back out. Back out on the road just for one night.
Well,
just to go up to Frankenmuth on a Friday. You're not doing anything. There's no special engagement at the castle. So why don't you do it? I can't think of anybody else I want to work with.
All right,
unless Corey wants to do it.
I'll do it.
Corey's already been up there.
I've been up there recently. Huh? Yeah. I was up there.
Oh, he's already done it. Okay,
he was just there. I've never been there. Yeah, I'll let you know. Let me handle this show, and then we'll think about it.
Well, they're doing flyers. They're trying to get flyers in the next couple of days. They got to kind of let me know.
All right,
we're not going. I don't think we're doing the winery. I think it's a town. I think it's Middleton.
That might be the winery.
Well, I haven't done that one. I could do that.
Yeah, it's Melissa Melissa is taking over comedy. I'm glad I had her on the show before she gets too
big. Yeah, I'm glad she's a friend of yours, because you talked during the book and me, and that's what it took.
Yeah, that's what I do now.
I'm like shit about my 30 years of experience, but, you know, Joel Fragamenti says he's okay, then I guess I'm all right.
Because I am good at telling comics what a good gig is, as opposed to the bullring, and saying, hey, go there, because this person knows how to set up a room, and this person knows how to run a show, because I told her, and because you told me. And that's how it all works. So it's all your shit.
Well,
it's all the seeds that you sowed for 20 years, Bill. You're reaping that in.
The crops are in.
Yeah, finally. The chickens have come home to roost, Hildebrandt.
I was just going to say, the chickens have come home to roost.
Yeah,
oh, my God. Hallelujah. Can I get a hallelujah?
The eggs are being laid. And you're going to...
Well, at least somebody's getting laid.
Hey-oh.
All right. Anyway, give me a shot. I won't take up any more radio time.
Exactly. Believe me, we've got important. Matt Lauer touched a woman. We got to get to that.
We've got all kinds of sexual misconduct material to cover, Bill.
We're doing our creep of the week next, so you don't want to make that. But so anyway, we're gonna do all this. We're gonna talk about. We can do a creep of the week about people in our actual lives.
Yeah.
But we won't be doing that now. Maybe future show. I got to tell you that story. That's a breaking news.
Yeah, there'll be more meat on that bone later on.
Exactly. All right, Bill, thanks a lot.
I don't know how there could be more meat on those bones.
Bill Hildebrandt.
Over and out.
Nader. Bill Hildebrandt checking in.
Well,
look at
Battle
this.
Of the Bills back and forth.
Well, he's calling me. What are the odds? I'm on the phone with Bouchard.
And then Hildebrandt.
On a show. Then Hildebrandt calls. It's unbelievable.
Oh, my.
All right. Matt Lauer's in trouble. I am on my resume. When it says special skills, I say Today Show historian.
Weren't you all upset about the Ann Curry?
I jumped off the Today Show.
Yeah,
and went to the local morning show
mm-hmm.
when Savannah Guthrie took over. That pretty much was the end of that. But Matt Lauer...
Was that the Ann Curry? Savannah Guthrie took over Ann Curry?
Well, it seems like Matt Lauer kind of forced out Ann Curry. Natalie Morales was in there somewhere, and then Savannah Guthrie got hired. Here's the thing about Matt Lauer that didn't surprise me, is I follow... And I've talked about it on the show before. There's a website that has blind items and their probable answers. And for years, they've been talking about Matt Lauer. And one of the things was that, you know, Ann Curry was forced out because of Matt Lauer. Matt Lauer didn't like Ann. Natalie Morales was hot at the Today Show, largely because, according to this site, Matt Lauer was having sex with Natalie Morales. Matt Lauer's wife left him over that infidelity. Natalie Morales recently, within, I believe, the last year, left the Today Show. Which, again, speculative means Matt Lauer was done fucking her. And because she's got a big contract at NBC, they move her over to Access Hollywood, where she is not a great fit. But again, it's the same parent company.
She's not a great
not
fit,
a great fit. Well,
over at Access Hollywood.
Again, you know, look, being a great fit at Access Hollywood is, you know, I don't know what that is.
Over with the cutting edge. She's
well, I mean, to her credit, she's almost too smart to be on Access Hollywood when you've got Kit Hoover and Billy Bush,
Jesus,
which we can talk about
Christ
in a minute. But yeah, I mean, whoever's over there now, I don't even know who the male guy is. It's not Billy Bush anymore. But
where's Mario Lopez? Which one's he on?
He's on Extra. But you know, so anyway, Matt Lauer, I've kind of known about.
Who are those people that don't have the internet, those shows?
Yeah, I believe your grandmother isn't reading TMZ all day, so she can sit down.
I mean, like, who has actually watched those Access Hollywood?
Here's what I want you to do. You've seen a lot in your life, Corey. You don't need your eyes anymore. You don't need your ears. Go watch Page Six TV. You will poke your fucking eyes out with a golf pencil.
Is that better?
Somewhere midway through that thing.
What's the radio roundup one that's the worst thing that ever
happened? Oh, no, that's, what is the name of that one? We fucking hate that thing, too.
I know. I haven't watched it in forever.
But that, I believe, is like this in the syndication package with TMZ, so you get both, sort of. It's like an hour block of that.
What is that with Head Crack?
Ricky Smiley.
Yeah. And Ricky
Smiley. That show used to be way worse because they had Scott Shannon and those guys on.
Oh, but yeah. What did the...
I don't even know. I've forgotten these bad television shows. But yeah, anyway, Matt Lauer's out, and I'm not surprised. Although, you know, he did have a... You know, he kept that shit secret, didn't he? He had a golden reputation, but, you know, he was one of the boys. One of the creepier things that came out that people didn't like and apparently got tons of shock was that if you were in Matt Lauer's office, he had a button at his desk that could lock you into the office.
Yes.
By the way, that's being installed next week here at the Joel Radio Studios. But no, I'm kidding. But yeah, but apparently NBC claims that if you are a high-profile anchor or somebody famous, that they install that on all the doors for security purposes, meaning if there was an active shooter in the building or a stalker or something. That's
sure.
But apparently he used it to lock women in. Some woman needed medical attention.
But you
after
can't get out when
assaulted.
He clocks the...
Like, I guess he can lock from under his desk, lock you in. Which is funny, when I was watching The Problem with Apu, they had the clip of Mr. Burns with the button under his desk. So yeah, Matt Lauer's out. Your thoughts? I mean, yeah,
well,
you could give a fuck, but he's a guy who's been there forever. He was sort of a made man over there.
I don't watch the Today Show either. Mm-hmm. I do. I was on the local morning show for a long time.
You were.
So I would, you know, do that and watch that.
Yeah.
But which not to say that, you know, the local morning shows are paragons of virtue. And,
no.
Entertainment level or reporting, but it just, I think because I know the people on those shows, it's easier for me to watch. But yeah, the Today Show's bubble-headed. My wife hates the Today Show.
I've always hated Good Morning America, but the Today Show has followed. Good Morning America went to the they went lowbrow and cat videos and all kinds of shit long before.
Well,
the Today Show did, and then the Today Show followed. They got high ratings, so then the Today Show had to follow. And that's why they say one of the reasons Ann Curry was fired is that Ann Curry was hard news, and Good Morning America was doing Robin Roberts and George Stephanopoulos.
When I was growing
and
up.
And Laura, who I don't want to say it. Laura Spencer.
Okay.
Who, Satan spawn herself, Laura Spencer, who was awful. But yeah, so the Today Show needed to soften, which meant, I think, Ann Curry's removal.
When I was growing up, the Today Show had, you know, it was Jane Pauley and Bryant Gumbel.
Willard Scott.
And Willard Scott would come on for his five. But here was the thing. Willard Scott would come on and do his comedy shtick, and then they'd move on.
Yeah.
And the Today Show, I think, was Jane Pauley and Bryant Gumbel in particular, and then Lauer and Couric, were able to transition between serious news and fluff more easily.
Yeah.
At some point, the fluff took over.
It did. And it's funny, and I don't watch those shows. In the current political climate, I would imagine, even though I don't watch these shows, that they must have a harder edge today than they did a couple of years ago.
And if I'm going to watch a news program in the morning, and not that this doesn't have its flaws, but I'll be more inclined, if I'm up in the morning and want to watch a news show, I'll watch, like, Morning Joe.
Yeah.
If I'm going to actually
get political
coverage.
They're the complete opposite spectrum. The thing about
them, they're gossipy as well.
Right, but here's the thing about Morning Joe, to their credit, even though I think Scarborough's ridiculous in his own way.
Oh, yeah.
He's entertaining, but ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I don't know, I'm sitting here saying
when the morning shows went fluff, it allowed the cable shows to be more edgy and attract that audience that might have watched the Today Show can now go watch Joe Scarborough or whoever. Fox Business has a morning show that covers a lot of that political stuff.
Well, Fox and Friends is a fucking disaster.
They're not super political, I don't think. I mean, they are on their own. They have their segments, but they go out on the plaza and throw snowballs into a cornhole fucking thing, too.
They're terrible. Steve Ducey is the dumbest piece of
but
shit.
Elizabeth Hasselbeck is off that show. By the way, where is she now?
I don't know. She can go.
Exactly. Well, she's gone.
All the morning shows are fluff. Believe me, when I did local morning.
Yeah, it's all good.
I would struggle to try and get, like, have an adult conversation for more than 2 minutes at a time. Yeah. And they were always like, hey, look at this. It's because it's a visual medium and they want it to, like, keep moving. They have a discussion show in the evening, but that's where everybody yells at each other, where they bring in lawyers to yell at each other and like community activists. So I didn't care about Matt Lauer, but I also, even on the small local level that I have been in, local newsrooms and radio stations and local media, and I've been on some, like, people in the middle of the country have no fucking idea how people behave, and they think they have kind of a childish puritanical premise about how people in show business behave sexually.
Yeah.
And so now some of what Matt Lauer did went above and beyond the call. But as we were saying earlier, Matt Lauer, obviously enough women liked Matt. Enough women were into Matt Lauer that he felt like he was a goddamn sexual Tyrannosaurus. That does not excuse him.
He's got a $20 million a year contract for that show.
He was being rewarded.
All the money and all the fame you could possibly have at a morning show.
He had every indication that he was a god amongst men.
Money, power, fame.
And then that tends to warp your personality.
Absolutely.
To which you think, well, basically, you should be entitled to whatever comes by in a skirt.
Yeah.
And I think that also is part of the reason. Why do you think guys force themselves? It's not easy work.
No.
You got to get up at 4 a.m. I mean, I know you're getting paid $20 million, and it's
not
you're digging a trench or something. Yeah. But you got to get up at 4 a.m. and you got to be ready, and it takes skill and talent and to do that well and to do it at the level that Matt Lauer did it for 20 years and to have high ratings. That's all a lot of pressure. And so you know what people do in those circumstances when they have pressure and money and fame? They fuck.
Well, you know how you watch a show.
And you know who doesn't fuck? Lamos.
Okay, here's what I've... And again, I'm trying to not make a generalization that makes me sound sexist or wrong, and I've certainly been guilty of that on this show. But you know how you watch a show? And again, I'm making a generalization. I'm not going to give specific examples, but we could certainly find them, where you've watched a show and you went like, yeah, I bet those two are fucking.
Oh,
they're
all
fucking
the time.
But the generalization is you watch a show and you're like, I bet you that talk show host fucked that actress after the show.
Joe and Mika.
That did that. Okay, and that's what I'm saying. We can give specific examples, but you see where, the host is really flirting with this actress. He was probably fucking her. He was fucking her. That's a generalization, but it is true. He's fucking her.
Let's look.
Letterman was fucking Terry Garr. Craig Ferguson fucked God knows how many girls on that show.
From The Office.
Yes. Who did she fuck?
Ferguson.
Okay.
Because watch those interviews. Everyone,
by the way,
oh, Angie Dickinson and Johnny Carson.
And Johnny Carson.
Angie Dickinson.
Angie Dickinson fucked Larry King.
Angie Dickinson basically came on The Tonight Show and, you know, pulled her pants down.
For Johnny.
For
yeah.
Johnny every time.
But, you know.
And she swooned on him.
If you watch television, you go, boy, if I was that guy and that woman is on my show, mm-hmm. I would try to have sex with her. Those guys try to have sex with those women. It's not like we are sitting at home going, oh, man, I would love to do this. And if boy, he must be a great guy because he loves mm-hmm. his wife and he's not fucking these actresses. The guy is fucking those actresses. You know, Letterman was fucking bro. I mean, Letterman, of all the guys who you don't think of a Coxman,
even
Letterman was fucking the intern.
Even on a local level and amongst our friends, right?
Yeah.
We know comic Jeff and Esther are a couple.
Okay, yeah.
And people were like, oh, look at Jeff and Esther. They're real close. And then suddenly they're a couple. You've dated girls that were in comedy.
Absolutely.
Because they're nearby. That's who people end up
dating.
We
liked each other. It's fine.
No, I'm not saying
but,
that.
But when you see two people who look like they like each other, they may have sex.
But office romances are pretty standard issue for people. Because you're around people all the time. And particularly if you're in like television or comedy or you're in something mm-hmm. that's kind of a high pressure competitive environment or whatever.
Yes.
Then the tendency for you to be like, as a human being, you express yourself sexually.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. I'm not saying Matt Lauer wasn't a creep.
Yeah.
But for people to be like clutching their pearls and fainting and, oh my goodness, Matt Lauer, like that they believe that Matt Lauer was this like guy next door.
Yeah. Well, that's the fallacy. Yeah.
This childishness.
Guys lop their balls off when they become famous because they have some morals clause that's preventing them from getting laid.
Also, women never want to have sex ever. It's all just a...
that's the other one.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just werewolf men chasing Little Red Riding Hood around a forest.
And
no woman has ever been sexually aggressive. No woman in show business, no actress, no television personality has ever used her fame or success to get around or fuck anybody she wanted to get to in the business. Like, give me a break. There's a childish prudishness behind some of this. And there's also a very real and very serious need to look at behavior in the workplace and how people are treated that is good that is coming out of this. Yeah. But there's also this liberal prudishness, which is no better than conservative prudishness.
The thing is, you have to understand this, and this is something I know. You see the magician with the pretty girl assistant.
He's fucking her.
You see the two news anchors who have been on the air together for 20 years and they have good chemistry. He's fucking her. The guy, you know, Jon Stewart. The old Jon Stewart talk show on MTV, he was famous for that.
My friend Jason Carr is married to Taryn Asher.
Yeah.
Who they were on the same station.
Exactly, yeah.
And how do you think that happened?
Right. And I'm not saying that
which
these
is
are...
good. They're married, but it's
but
like...
They are not awful people. They are not, you know, do they have giant egos and are they obsessed with looks and all of that stuff? Absolutely. But they really are real people. You know, celebrities, famous people are real people. And so you sitting at home going, mm-hmm. boy, I'd love to fuck her. Well, so does the guy sitting next to her. And while she won't fuck you because you're not rich and famous, the guy that's interviewing her is. And that's the thing you have to remember. It is not, I'm not saying it happens 100%. I'm not trying to make that broad generalization, but... You know, it is a thing. You know, people do take advantage of their celebrity. If you're a regular person and a celebrity tries to fuck you, that celebrity knows that they have a pretty good chance of doing that, male or female. And, you know, the number of times that they get ready. And again, you know what I sound like right now? I sound a little bit like Donald Trump on the bus with Billy Bush. And I don't want to say I'm not in any way, shape, or form defending mm-hmm. Donald Trump or saying that he should be the president. But
that wasn't a crazy statement.
That
him.
Statement that Donald Trump made and said to Billy Bush was the truth of the way of Donald Trump's life, the way that he lives his life. I'm not saying you can't choose to not live that way, but if you choose to live that way, that is the reality for people like him.
He was like, I went after Nancy O'Dell, even though she's married, comes off as bad.
But it does. He also say, I tried to fuck her and he did, and she didn't.
Trump's,
so that's, you know.
Here's the other difference. Trump's gross. Mm-hmm. No one wants to have sex with Donald Trump. He seems like...
Right. But lots of women have.
Exactly, because he has money. And Hugh Hefner.
And Weinstein was gross, but women had sex with him.
And Hugh Hefner, by the way, who was according to some girls I know, some women with a Y, was Satan himself on Earth, a demon that strode the Earth to make women's lives miserable, except for the thousands of them that fucked him of their own free will.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like... And we're going to get hammered by this.
We're not getting hammered. The bottom line is
that... When I say hammered, two people will
message me and say I'm out of line.
But women are acting like they don't have any sexual agency or responsibility in any interaction with men. And that, we know, is not true.
Well...
We do... I'm not saying that we should excuse Harvey Weinstein... You know, cornering women and spanking it into a ficus because that poor plant didn't know that was coming.
I'm very proud of the image I put up for that show, but
that was good.
Anyway, if you go to joelradio.net, but here's the thing.
I'm never shocked. Okay.
Here's the thing. And you say you're never shocked. This is what's going to come out of this. The blinds are open. The sunshine is coming in. And here's the thing. We're going to learn that there is no such thing as a great, virtuous person. Destroy those myths in your mind. If you are a person, if you're a civilian who's not in show business or not in the media and hasn't been around the media firsthand, you're going to learn that there are people who do things that are completely normal that you will find reprehensible in your own way. And then there are reprehensible people. But those reprehensible people work at the Ford plant in Woodhaven. And they're mailmen.
Well,
and they're guys who work in restaurants. And they're there, too. So you can't say it's all of show business or it's all of politics. It is human behavior. It is human behavior being exposed in a different level where because of the media and their relationship with celebrity, that these stories were swept under the rug, that these things were hidden from public view. And yeah, there's been books and there's been whispers of things and there's been even these blind items like I talk about, big article on Daily Beast about those and Entertainment Lawyers website, which is, again, something I've been talking about for years on this show, where these things are coming out. And is this good? No, it's painful. But that reality that we will have when all of this is shaking out, when you hear so-and-so news anchor, so-and-so movie actor, so-and-so politician, stop being shocked, stop being surprised, stop being prudish, understand that there is a world that is hidden from you, which is for business reasons, for PR reasons. But
it's not even that hidden. I think that this is kind of the state. Okay. Some discussion has been going on about kitchens.
Kitchens.
And bars.
Kitchens.
Now, as a comedian, you are tangentially involved in the bar. You are involved in the bar business.
Our level of comedy is largely the bar business.
Okay, but even if you're working
Bill Hildebrand sleeping in the kitchen.
But even if you're working in clubs.
Yes.
I mean, theater.
Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle is the bar business.
Theaters are a little different, but guess what? That's a bar business too. Yeah. So if you're an entertainer, you're in the bar business. Really, is what you are. You just don't work in one bar in particular. Yeah. You know, I mean, I work at the Comedy Castle enough to know the staff and come back there a couple times a year, but like, you're in the bar business, and you know what happens, the main source
of revenue is the bar.
And I'm aware of how the bar business works. And I'm understanding how the restaurant business works because I've worked in kitchens and I've have enough people I know who work in kitchens and I've been around restaurants and bars. Mm-hmm. And you know what goes on in those? Fucking.
Yeah.
You know what happens? A lot of young people.
Yeah.
A lot of young people are bartending, waiting tables. And then you go to Hollywood and it's a lot of young actors and actresses that are working in bars in Hollywood and shit. There is a real puritanical streak that exists in the American mind. And what I find fascinating is that the people who Mike Pence won't have dinner with a woman who isn't his wife. Right?
Well.
Because he's basically like the ecumenical conservative. Well, like
he won't have dinner with her, but will he invite her back to a hotel room later?
I don't know.
I mean, that's the thing about him, yeah.
Mike Pence is this very hardcore.
I'm not accusing Mike Pence.
He's this very hardcore evangelical Christian. Mm-hmm. Which in a certain level is no fucking different than this like hardcore Muslim. Because if you get into like Judaism and Orthodox Judaism or Islam, the men and the women don't even pray together. Mm-hmm. They co- you know what I mean? They either go at different times or they put a curtain up between the men and the women in the chapel or in the synagogue or whatever. And I think there's people would like that. It's funny that the same people, the Jezebel bloggers that hate Mike Pence they want a kind of a sexual
Puritanism. That is somebody's fantasy world that they've tried to create, and it's not the real world. And it's also not the real world that every single person is a lech who's drugging women and jerking off on their feet like Bill Cosby. That's not real either. In there is that. People are attracted to one another. People enjoy sex. Yeah, are trying to have sex. But let's make that the new normal and not the vilification of an entire group. That everybody's, and we got to move on.
Here's the difference. There is a line, and we have to figure out where the line is.
Yeah.
And the line is if you're like a boss and you make someone's employment contingent on sexual activity, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you whip out your junk in front of somebody who didn't ask to see it,
yeah,
or didn't know it was coming, that's wrong.
Yeah.
If you hold someone, you know, hostage in their office without their consent, that's wrong. If you're fucking all the girls on the staff because you're a popular news anchor,
yeah,
don't be shocked by that.
Well, it is what it is. All right, let's begin. I gotta talk about. It's funny, the irony of this coming out this week. Was not lost on some of the reviews I read, but I want to talk about this right now because this is good. If you have Netflix, which all of America has, and it's destroying our internet bandwidth, which will lead to a lack of net neutrality in the future, there's a documentary called Voyeur on Netflix that I saw. And Voyeur, a Netflix original documentary, and I think this is one that Netflix kind of does this every year. I'm trying to remember what last year's was, where they have at least one documentary that they feel is Oscar worthy. It might even be that the one about Hulk Hogan and Gawker might be one this year that they're trying to get considered. I don't know. I think the short list for Oscar docs might be out. But it's called Voyeur. I really liked it. It's got about a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes at this point. It's about a reporter named Gay Talese.
Yes, who's a legendary writer.
Legendary writer.
Esquire, he wrote these most
New Yorker. And
most famously wrote a piece called Frank Sinatra Has a Cold, which is like one of the most revered magazine profiles of all time.
And so it's really about Gay Talese and a man named Gerald Foos. Now, Gerald Foos owned a motel in Aurora, Colorado. And he wrote, Gay Talese did a book called Thy Neighbor's Wife, which was about, what was really happening in America, sex in America. And you'll see this in the documentary where in the 80s, Gay Talese went out to, you know, nudist colonies and swinger conventions and that kind of stuff, resorts, and actually engaged in whatever these people were doing and wrote about it from a firsthand perspective. So he did sort of that 60s gonzo embedded reporting type stuff on this subject, and as part of doing it, which caused strain on his wife and children, which you'll see in the movie, both his wife and children in archival footage and in present day. But this Gerald Foos guy got a hold of him and said, I own a motel and I know all of these, and I know a lot about the sexuality that is happening in the middle of the country. Because in this motel, I have bought, in fact, I purchased this motel for the sole purposes of spying on the people staying at the motel. And he built in the attic a way of spying through the vents. And he would sit up there all night and he would log the sexual activity of these people in the hotel. And he wrote to Gay Talese. Gay Talese, as part of his research for that book, Thy Neighbor's Wife, actually went to the hotel. Gay Talese, again, as that embedded reporter, went into the crow's nest with Gerald Foos and watched these various activities at the hotel. Which, you know, again, a lot of this movie is about journalistic ethics. As creepy as the subject matter is, a lot of it is about, did Gay Talese do the right thing? And Gay also said that he did not write about this man, Gerald Foos, when he wrote that book. And it was only until about, I think, 2014 that he decided now is the time to write this book. Gerald Foos sold the hotel. the statute of limitations on whatever crimes he may or may not have committed as part of doing this hotel, spending his hotel, was over. And so Gay Talese says, now is the time to write the book. And he contacts him. And the story is about the relationship between these two men. And, yeah, there's a lot of creepy stuff in there. And Gerald Foos does not come off as a good guy. Don't get me wrong. Gay Talese, you want to like. He's very charming. He's well-spoken. But you wonder about his journalistic ethics. And really, the movie... and so, anyway, you see the whole behind the scenes of Gay Talese trying to write the book called The Voyeur's Motel, Gerald Foos's stories, what crimes did Gay Talese not know that Gerald Foos may have committed while engaging in these activities that Gay Talese was not aware of comes up. So there's twists, there's turns, who's telling the truth, who's lying. You know, the whole thing is interesting. I think it's very interesting to see how magazines like The New Yorker operate. Because there were fact checkers.
Yeah.
And it is not just, you know, Gerald Foos tells Gay Talese the story. Gay Talese buys the story. They take to the fact checkers. And then what happens? I don't want to give away anything. It's very well done. I think there are people that will just be turned off by the subject matter. And I think there's also people who goes, I don't really give a shit about reporters and how the media is done. I find that boring.
Well,
but if you like any of those things, I think they did a great job with this documentary.
I feel like people don't understand how journalism works.
Yeah. Yeah,
people don't have any understanding
yes.
of it. We had two very illustrative examples just recently of, you know, this guy, James O'Keefe, this Project Veritas guy.
I don't know him.
He's a conservative blogger, mm-hmm. knucklehead. He's this young douchebag.
Yeah.
And he was the one who did the sting on Acorn where he dressed
okay,
up like
yeah,
a pimp
yeah.
and a hoe.
Yeah, okay. I've seen
and, you know,
I know that story.
And by the way, that thing got completely twisted
yeah.
around because he walked into the office of... You know, Acorn dressed as a pimp, and they all kind of looked at him like you're crazy.
Yeah, and they were polite to him.
But the way,
yeah, yeah.
much like the Hank Azaria didn't want to be at the mercy of the editing.
Yeah,
I think the people in Acorn got stung with that
yeah.
shit. Anyway, his job is he goes around and tries to show that media outlets lie,
mm-hmm.
and he sent a woman to several media outlets, including the Washington Post and Samantha Bee's show.
Mm-hmm.
She told a story about Roy Moore raped her and knocked her up and he wouldn't pay for the abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And the Washington Post fact checked it and went, nope, her story fell apart
yeah.
on questioning.
Yes.
And Samantha Bee also was like, get out of here with this.
Yeah.
And it blew up in his face
yeah.
That the Washington Post did its actual job
yeah.
and checked the story.
Yeah,
he was like trying to set a trap for them to be like they'll fall for anything.
Yeah, it's
and then meanwhile ABC
mm-hmm.
ran with a story that they had the details of a little or the wording they've been told kind of a little off on the Trump deal.
Yeah, it's
and so now the conservatives are like, well, but principally what ABC reported wasn't wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that the wording was a little off.
So
sometimes people don't yeah. understand how reporting works.
I do think the irony of this movie coming out now, because you may not like,
yeah.
you're certainly not going to like Gerald Foos. You may not even like Gay Talese. And this boy, could this hurt his legacy, what he did as part of the writing of this book? I think it's worth seeing. I mean, you're a journalist
to some degree.
Well, but you know what? A guy who's been on the show a couple times, Steve Miller, I got to make sure watches this because Steve is a guy. Guy who will go and get the story, and he will sort of, you know, Steve's an old punk rocker, and he definitely has a DIY ethic, and I think him and Gay Talese, Steve really reminded me, Gay Talese really reminded me of Steve in watching this story, and I know when I say Steve Miller gets embedded with the story, he's been to like three Gathering of the Juggalos, so he's
yeah.
and the Washington March where he spoke, so you know, I thought it was very well done. Again, is it for everybody? Do I want to go out and say, hey, mom, dad, go watch Voyeur on Netflix? No, it's not as titillating as you might think it's going to be. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's something you can beat off to, and I certainly will recommend something if the sole purpose is beating off to it, and I don't think this is a movie that you can do that to. But we will talk more about Gilbert in a second. But no, I'm kidding. It's a joke.
Right, now we've gone down.
I've had too much coffee.
Yeah, we've gone down a road.
But Voyeur is on Netflix. It debuted over the weekend. I don't know if it's Oscar worthy. We'll see if it gets there as Netflix probably hopes. Very interesting film, though. I enjoyed it, so go watch that. You finally saw Gilbert. I loaned you the Blu-ray when you
and
left.
And I forgot to bring it back.
Well, that's all right. Did you watch the commentary? I know
I did not watch
it.
Oh, the commentary,
it's fun. You watch it with the commentary.
I watched
You'll enjoy
a little bit
it
of the extras, which yeah. were just some extras.
That was just
cuts.
Extras, but it's all good stuff on there. Gilbert's well done. Tell us what you thought.
Yeah, it's well done. It's I think it's worth seeing, even if you don't like Gilbert Gottfried particularly.
You'll probably like him more.
You will learn to like him more. And having met Gilbert, I've interviewed Gilbert twice.
Yeah.
And worked with him, and you've worked with him and had him on the show. That's the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not...
I don't think you or I were surprised by the...
No.
But by the real Gilbert, because we know the guy a little bit. But I think people that only know him as the loudmouth or whatever, or this filthy comic that did The Aristocrats...
talks about how...
You see those things.
He's kind of uncomfortable letting people see behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Because he'd rather, it's easier to do the bit and the act. But no, he's not like, wow, all the time.
I think he tells the story in the documentary about, and I've heard him in interviews when he talks about the movie, too. He says his fantasy is that he'll be in the green room and the manager will come back. You know, Gilbert, we're about to do the show, but there was a fire or a flood and we have to cancel.
Yeah.
So here's your check. you know, that's his fantasy about performing. There.
Which is ridiculous because... Stand up is hard up until you get on the stage.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes it's hard when you get on the stage of the Bullring. But it's the joy of doing. Anyway.
Well, that is the irony of comedy.
Yeah.
Is the more famous you get and the better venues you play, the easier it gets. Comedy's never harder than when you've never done it before and you're on stage at an open mic where
no
one gives a fuck.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's when it's hardest. And I tell my students that. I go, look, you're going to go do these open mics, and you're going to struggle, and you're going to have a hard time. But if you do well, you'll eventually get booked at Comedy Castle, and you'll be here on a Saturday night, and you'll be killing. It'll be the easiest crowd ever.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's weird. You know, you could take a brand-new comic who's never done comedy or a guy that's been doing it for 3 months, and you could still throw him on Saturday night to Comedy Castle, and the cruel irony is they will actually probably have the best show they ever had. And that's why sometimes those student showcases are really good, because you have those friendly crowds. But the problem is there is a gate. There is, there is a way of natural selection that says survive these things. Now you finally the reward, the fruit at the end is the big gig.
It is still it's still quite possible to bomb at a good room.
Yeah, no,
and
it is.
We
it
see
is.
It all the time.
It is, but not if you're skilled and you develop skills working these bad gigs. One thing, if you do watch the commentary on the Gilbert, they talk a lot about his shirts. He has a shirt that he flies in, which is interesting, and you see it. Like, there's a clip in the beginning where he's on Arsenio back in the 90s in some loud-ass sweater. Mm-hmm. And then later, it's only in the commentary that you realize this, there's a shot of Dara vacuum packing up his clothes, and one of the sweaters that she's storing is the Arsenio sweater from
really,
the 90s. So there's a lot of good stuff in there.
The fact that there's all the... he takes the stuff from the hotel.
The soaps,
and they're all packed up under the bed.
And there's stuff from Eastern Airlines and airlines that no longer exist.
Well, then you're like, you're a hoarder. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit disturbing.
And that's a little bit of the Gilbert stuff. I remember Gilbert leaving the Gathering of the Juggalos. And I don't know if I've told this part of the story, even though that's where I interviewed him. But it was after the show. And I was talking to one of the guys, the producers, behind the scenes guys at the Gathering, about, you know, who's driving Gilbert to the car that was going to take him back to the hotel. And I had a golf cart, and he had a golf cart, and I had driven Gilbert earlier, but I was busy running my next show. And I remember we were having this conversation in front of Gilbert in the trailer. And Gilbert had just had, like, this amazing show, and it was really fun, and, you know, Gilbert had a good time. I remember just seeing Gilbert sitting in a chair, and he is clutching. I'll try to do this for you anyway. In his arms, like a newborn baby, holding a jar of Planters peanuts that was provided for him in the trailer for pre-show, and just a brand new unopened jar of peanuts that Gilbert was going to take to the hotel or back home to New York to enjoy later. And no matter what the array, he could give a fuck about who's driving him or any of the stuff we were talking about.
But he got peanuts.
Gilbert would not forget those goddamn fucking peanuts to save his life. Yeah. Those peanuts were coming home with Gilbert. So it was a little bit of that. And you see that in the movie where they talk about Gilbert stealing all the food.
Well, compulsions don't
catering.
Go away. Yeah. That's another mistake that people make about celebrities. Mm-hmm. Your compulsions don't go away because you're famous.
Yeah.
or your whatever your wiring is,
yeah,
doesn't change because people know who you are.
It's you become an exaggerated version.
And if
of
anything else,
you
they intensify.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know,
tell us before we wrap up here, movie wise, Lady Bird, a lot of Oscar buzz. Greta Gerwig, you've seen it. Tell us about Lady Bird.
Lady Bird's a very enjoyable movie. It's like a semi-autobiographical, probably pretty autobiographical story, directed by Greta Gerwig, who is the indie darling queen of mumblecore.
Yes.
Partner of Noah Baumbach.
Yeah. I try to watch that Arthur movie as frequently as I possibly
Her mainstream career is not. She really works a lot of indie
Russell
movies.
Brand Arthur. By the way, if you want a Cinema Roast Crunch suggestion, the Russell Brand Arthur, I should probably
that's
let
really
Brett know.
Bad.
That's a piece of garbage.
You know, we try not to do comedies.
Yeah,
when
but
we're doing
that one's
the, like,
real bad.
I wanted to do Jingle All the Way for the Christmas episode. Well, by the way,
What about Chairman of the Board with Carrot
Top?
Let me plug that.
If you're in the Detroit area, December 10th, it's part of the Big Time Garbage Fest. It's actually the last show.
Oh, good, yeah.
There's Big Time Garbage Fest is going to have Kurt Metzger, Leonard Utz, and Todd Barry are some of your headliners. And there's going to be some other surprise guests. That's our friends Ray Holyfield and Brett Mercer, Blaine Hill, all those guys I think are behind the Big Time. Ray does the Ray and Laura show.
Yeah, you've done that.
And they have their own podcast, which we haven't been invited to yet, but we know, whatever.
Let me go check the mail before we continue and see if that's invites in there.
I'm not.
That's fine.
I like those
guys. And
anyway,
but with
Brett Hayden is the guy who puts on the.
And I like Brett too.
Big
Brett
time.
Hayden's funny.
Yeah, he worked with Bill and
good
I a couple
comic,
weeks ago.
Good comic.
Anyway, Cinema Roast Crunch is a riffing show, and it's live riffing. It's not. We don't pre-script the stuff. We just watch a movie. Two guys kind of compete against each other, and each like they'll do. We'll do 15 minutes of the movie at a time, and then I am the defending current belt holding champion.
You won a championship belt.
There's an actual championship belt.
I saw the photos.
I don't think the belt is on the line this time.
Oh, non-title match.
Yeah, I think it's a well, there's a tournament of champions.
Oh, okay.
And so you'll get some guys will win, and then they get.
So it's like the G1.
Yeah.
The IWGP champion.
So in order to beat the man, in order to be the man, you got to beat the man. So
you okay? You are Kazuchika Okada.
Yeah, I am currently.
But the way that it works, Corey, if I can book your thing out, is you have, in order for you to generate a crowd when you defend your title, is you have to let the challenger win the non-title.
Okay.
So you have to throw it.
Yeah.
So you can't win. Basically, what I'm telling you, if you're going, and Brett understands wrestling, he's a wrestling fan, as all those guys are. You have to lose in this tournament in order to make the return bout.
What's going
to
happen is that
Okada put Kenny Omega over in G1.
Brett Mercer is going to throw a lie in my eyes, and I'm going to be blinded and go to the hospital, and then I'm going to miss the birth of my daughter. So that when we get together at the Superdome, it'll be a rematch. No, that was Michael Hayes and the Junkyard.
Oh, okay.
But anyway. Well, I'm going to leave town, and the Midnight Rider will be defending my title. Anyway,
you'll be blinded, but secretly working in Japan.
Yes.
As Roddy Piper in the
80s. I'm going to come back with a cast on my arm that I won't take off for 2 years. The movie this time is the greatest, perhaps the greatest arm wrestling drama ever filmed.
Oh, okay, Over the Top.
Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone.
Terry Funk is in that, I think.
Terry Funk's in Roadhouse.
Funk in Over the Top?
He's in Roadhouse.
Maybe he's not over the top. Some wrestlers in Over the Top. Maybe it's
you
not
know,
Terry
I haven't
Terry
seen.
Terry Funk was in a bunch of movies, though, in the 80s. He tried to do that.
Yeah, he's in Roadhouse.
Yeah, I know he's in Roadhouse.
Very famously. I haven't watched Over the Top in a long time, so this will be fun for me to
speaking
kinda
of garbage, have you seen Disaster Artist or not?
I have not seen the Disaster Artist.
Yeah, I want to see that.
I won the title doing The Room.
Doing The Room, which, by the way, don't even watch The Room. You know, I dated a girl.
Yeah.
Who only seemed to enjoy watching, like, ironically bad movies.
Yeah.
Which, ironically, we kind of had a bad relationship. But all she wanted to do was watch bad movies. So in the span of the months I dated her, it was The Room and Roadhouse and Showgirls every night.
I think I know which one this
is. And we couldn't watch anything good.
Yeah.
No offense to her. She's a fine lady.
I think I know.
But it was not my favorite thing to watch. But yeah, I did, because some of these I go, I don't know if I want to watch a bad movie. Ironically, I'd rather just watch a bad movie. But I'm glad, because I hear Disaster Artist is good. I know Nathan Fielder has a little spot in Disaster Artist, which makes me want to watch that, because Nathan For You is fantastic. So yeah, I'll see that when I can.
I'm obviously much more inclined to like garbage than you in terms of movies.
I just feel like there's only so much time, and I'd rather watch something good.
I never, but the Room, I never got into.
No, it's not. It's not even.
But I did enjoy riffing it. It was fun to like.
Well, when I watched it with this ex of mine, we enjoyed ripping on it.
Yeah,
and she liked seeing me see it for the first time. She had seen it 100 times. But yeah, it wasn't.
But that's the thing. I'm not going to watch The Room over and over again. But it did give me ample material to work with in riffing it. So there you go.
All right. Well, I've pissed off enough people.
I think we've done. Oh, hey, I've only seen. I've only watched maybe the first 2 episodes.
Oh.
But there is a comedy related show that's available.
Oh. Now,
that's on Amazon.
Oh.
From Amy Sherman Palladino, who is the creator of Gilmore Girls.
Oh.
There's a show called The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yes, I've heard about that.
Which is kind of loosely. Joan Riversy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
working like 50s not, coffee it, houses.
It's
and
not
that kind of stuff,
it's not specifically about Joan Rivers, but she's certainly maybe the model of this. It's the star is a girl named Rachel Brosnahan. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
I think Gilbert's in one of these.
I haven't seen him yet. I only saw the first 2 episodes.
I think Gilbert said he did.
Okay, but they do have like Lenny Bruce is actually in the show. There's a guy playing Lenny Bruce. She and Kevin Pollak is her father-in-law, and her dad is Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah.
So there's some good people in it. I enjoyed the pilot. It's a little. I mean, although as a comedian,
is
I'm
the series? Oh, you said you've watched 2. The series is out, right?
Series is out.
I think they're even doing a second season.
Maybe. I've only seen a couple.
It's been out for a while. I think. Yeah.
But it's worth a it's worth a look if you like comedy.
Okay.
It is. It's her like in the. Early 60s New York coffee shop.
Yeah.
She kind of accidentally becomes a comedian because mm-hmm. she's mad at her husband and she goes out one night and starts doing a rant.
Yeah.
And we'll see where it goes. I don't know. They make reference, like I said, Lenny Bruce is in it. There's a guy playing Lenny Bruce.
Yeah.
And we'll see if other Mort Saul and all these other guys.
It's
and
probably better than I'm dying up here.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It was not good.
Not good. And that never finished that season, by the way.
No.
I don't know if they're making more or not.
I'm sad to report I have only watched the pilot, but I have to watch more of it to make sure. But what is not good is There's Johnny, which was Paul Reiser's Johnny Carson show.
What, does he play the producer or something?
No, Paul Reiser's not even in it. He's the producer of it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Tony Danza's in it as Freddie DeCordova.
Freddie DeCordova, yeah.
And the pilot, it's like this kid writes a letter to Johnny Carson because he's from his hometown in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And Johnny writes him this letter, writes back and says, hey, you know, whatever happens in show business, your dreams come true. If you're ever out in L.A., come mm-hmm. say hi. Or what? Some nice letter, and the kid thinks he got a job at the Tonight Show.
Okay.
And he shows up, and they give him a job at the Tonight Show.
Well, that's
how
like, it works.
It's like the Wonder Years with Johnny Carson. But they actually have Johnny footage.
Oh, okay. But so, is there a guy that plays Johnny?
No, because...
It's all real Johnny footage, but you see Johnny in silhouette and stuff like that.
You never see Johnny himself. Yeah. You see, like... Because they had his elbow or
Dylan
whatever.
Baker played Johnny on I'm Dying Up Here. Right. And he actually was Johnny.
No, but this is like real 1972 footage of Johnny.
Okay.
They match the set and the whole thing.
Okay.
So then you'll see their characters on the set. It sounds better than it is.
Yeah.
Because it feels like the Wonder Years.
Yeah.
And
gotcha.
I think because they were working with the Carson people, the Carson estate, it's going to not. Be hard on Johnny.
It's going to be a whitewash on some level. It's not going to be the real story of what Johnny was up to.
But it's got Jane Leaves from Suburbia.
So he's not going to fuck Angie Dickinson on this show?
No, he's fucking Jane Leaves in this show. So.
Who's showing that?
That's on Hulu.
All right, Hulu.
It was intended for CISO, and then CISO folded.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this, but I'll keep talking about it.
Yeah, well,
stop with your goddamn streaming
services. No, there's too many.
Now DC Comics is going to do their own streaming service.
Fuck my life.
And CBS All Access, which I've never, by the way, I'm not ever watching that new Star Trek. And I am a Star Trek fan.
Yeah, why not?
Because I'm not buying the service.
They're going to put it on CBS in the summer or something, maybe?
I watch it when it's not on that CBS All Access. I refuse. unless somebody gives me their password, to pay for that.
Well, once,
just because I don't want
I figured this out. And my people are hesitant to do this. Why not? And I know they're rolling them out once they're all out. Why not get it for the month trial, watch all the Star Treks, and cancel?
Well, I think they've aired. I think they're running them out once a week.
I understand, but once they've all aired,
yeah, once they're all
you
aired,
could do that.
They're probably gonna
and they put them out once a week for that
you
reason.
Know what's but they're gonna get to the end and then they're gonna pull them all off. There,
maybe so they will.
So you can't pull that trick, but we'll see.
VPN torn. Excuse me.
I know. I know. I don't like to do that stuff.
Okay, but here, you know what? Here's the thing, and I'm going to tell you this. I finished American Horror Story Cult. I talked about it on the last show. I was so annoyed with... I pay for FX. I was so annoyed with the... It's all on my on-demand through Comcast. I was so annoyed with the commercials, and this even happened when I tried to watch Nathan For You on demand, where episodes were getting cut off by Comcast on demand, that I just went and downloaded the fucking shows because I wanted them with no commercials. And I actually thought that the video quality on some of them anyway were actually superior to what my cable company provides me by downloading the illegal version of American Horror Story Cult. And I actually watched them that way. So fuck all you motherfuckers. Yeah. And I'm still paying for cable. And now I'm going to get AT&T Fiber because they're finally offering that in my neighborhood. And I'm going to pay through the nose for that fucking shit. So fuck everybody. Figure your shit out. I'm going to enjoy what I'm going to enjoy. I'm paying through the nose. Well, don't fuck with me.
I got too many.
I do too. But you know what? I like the stuff that I watch. I pay money. Occasionally, I do download things that I'm not supposed to download. But God knows if anyone's supporting creators in this world, it's me. And it's me to the detriment of whatever. To the detriment of my appearance.
Speaking of supporting creators.
To the detriment of any whatever.
Start sending
my
us
personal
money.
Life.
Speaking of, why don't we have a Patreon or a Kickstarter?
Because
or
we're classy guys.
No, we're dopes. We used to have a lunch fund, and
we
it's time.
Still, all right, listen. Joel Radio could use some support. I thinking today, you like to take your microphone and twist various knobs, which makes a lot of noise. Get you a shock mount like I have.
Yeah.
Or something to that effect. I don't know. So maybe you can donate. JoelRadio.net. Joel@gmail.com. You can use Joel@JoelTheComic.com. JoelTheComic@gmail.com. Just PayPal me.
Oh.
And I will buy Corey a shock mount. Okay. How's that sound?
All right.
We'll do that if you like the show, if you enjoy the show.
Or we'll just put
formal...
that cash in the packet. All right. This episode brought to you by Casper Mattresses. If you're not sleeping on a Casper, you're a schnook. And I know you hate going to the post office, Joel.
I do.
So stamps.com, that's coming to you. Well, every other podcast.
And that's fine, because we're about to wrap up the show, and I will eat my new meal from Blue Apron.
There you go.
I'm kidding. Let's get out of here. Corey Hall, thank you so much for coming back.
We'll be brought to you by the Bull Ring.
Yes.
The
yes.
finest in comedy.
Yes. And you go see him. What can I tell
December 10th at the Big Time Garbage Fest at Sellerman's in Hazel Park, Michigan.
Hildebrandt.
Cinema Roast Crunch. Hildebrandt's blowing up my phone,
and it's funny, but it's
all
not
right.
for the show.
It's not for the
Let's
air.
Get out of here.
It's
Thank
so
you.
Ribald and filthy, we can't even say it on the air.
9:10 a.m. every Tuesday night. Go to 9:10 a.m. superstation.com to watch me and Mike Bonner on Tuesdays, 11 to 1. If you're in Detroit, you can listen on 9:10 a.m. radio. Again, the next advanced comedy class, January 6th at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. If you're a comic with a little bit of experience, like Melissa Hager, like Ted Moss, like Steve Hansen, Sam Silverstein, they've all been guests on this show. They've all done the advanced comedy class. They're all having great careers, except for Ted Moss. But you can take the advanced comedy class or the beginner class with Bill Bouchard. Thanks to Bill for calling in. Thanks to Bill Hildebrand for talking to us today.
A bucket of bills.
Thanks to, I don't know. What else can I tell you? We're going to get out of here. Star Wars, next Thursday night, The Last Jedi opens. Go to JoelRadio.net, subscribe to the podcast.
Of course,
you will
it's not
be
the
getting
last
that
Jedi,
show.
There'll be another movie next year, and then there'll be Han Solo film.
What's a better title than the third to Last Jedi?
Then there'll be Lando Comes to Harlem. Then there'll be,
Rey is going to fuck...
Chewbacca's big score.
Rey's going to fuck Finn, yeah. And then we're going to have biracial Jedi running across the universe, sure. Saving us.
Whatever it takes.
When the Porgs and go then, bad.
And then they're going to have a Indian stereotypical Jedi who will offend Aziz Ansari, and we'll all go to hell.
I'm out of here. Thank you, Corey. Thank you for listening. Good night.